As consumers, we're being bombarded with new information daily about genetic testing, and frankly, we should be concerned that many of these tests may not have the appropriate scientific basis to support what they say they'll do. Now, physicians are confused, too, about what these tests do and don't do, and how to present test results to patients as these relate to possible therapies and treatments, which may often require some tough choices and decisions. So, how do patients, that's us, take control and ownership of our health by better understanding genetic testing so we can have realistic expectations? That big question is exactly why our next guest is with us, to help us navigate this complicated genetic testing landscape. She is Dr. Diane Allingham Hawkins, PhD, Director of the Genetic Test Evaluation Program for Hays Incorporated. Dr. Allingham Hawkins, thank you for joining us today on Body Language.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
Please, Doctor, let's discuss the backstory, the basis for your concerns about what has been called the explosion in genetic testing. But first, tell us about Hays Incorporated, the work you do there, and how that benefits your clients and ultimately their customers, the public.
Certainly, Chris, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about Hays. Hays Incorporated is a health technology assessment company located in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, and for more than 20 years has been providing evidence-based evaluation of a vast array of medical technologies, looking at what the uses of these technologies are. Since 2008, we have had a genetic test evaluation program that looks specifically at the evidence behind the use of genetic and genomic tests.
What is the current state of genetic testing in the United States? That's really an important question because that's the question we're asked all the time.
It certainly is an important question, and I have to tell you that the best word to describe the current state of genetic testing in the United States is explosion. There is literally an explosion of genetic and genomic tests. There are at least 3,000 genetic and genomic tests on the market, and this number increases at a rate of about 25% a year.
Oof.
So 25% more tests each year are on the market.
Well, the real question is, who's minding the store? Or who should be, in your estimation?
Well, currently there are three levels of regulation of genetic tests in the United States. The vast, vast majority, more than 99% of genetic and genomic tests that are on the market in the United States are laboratory-developed tests. And what this means essentially is that the FDA, who regulates many of our medical devices and tests, actually exercises what we call enforcement discretion over these tests.
Enforcement discretion. That means they have a choice about what to enforce. Is that a fairly accurate translation?
That is an entirely accurate translation. The best analogy I ever heard of enforcement discretion was when you're driving down a street and you're going 5 miles an hour too fast, a police officer can decide whether to charge you with speeding or not.
They have discretion.
They have enforcement discretion. And that's what the FDA has over laboratory-developed tests. They could enforce regulation, but have chosen not to.
Well, very often the FDA will step in when there is a problem. In other words, when there is an issue around efficacy or safety. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, in laboratory-developed tests, these were originally designed to be very simple tests, a single analyte, a very simple interpretation. But what's happened is this category of tests has been exploited by various manufacturers, but mostly in genetic and genomic testing, into very complex tests that really have no transparency at all. And also with tests like direct-to-consumer
genetic tests. Ah, yes. I'm very glad we got into that.
And what happened in 2010 was the FDA started to realize that this category of tests was really being misused, and started to look a little bit more closely at it. Now, having said that, there were some meetings, some stakeholder meetings, some discussion in 2010 with a feeling that the FDA was going to regulate these tests a little bit more closely.
And did
they? We haven't heard anything since then. So presumably this the regulatory framework is still under review at the FDA.
Let me reintroduce you, please. We're speaking with Dr. Diane Allingham Hawkins, PhD, Director of the Genetic Test Evaluation Program for Hayes Incorporated. Doctor, how can people learn more about Hayes, and perhaps you could give the website URL?
Certainly. Hayes' website is hayesinc.com, which is Hayes with an E and an S, inc.com. And on the website, there are sample reports, there's more information about our company, white papers that we have produced on a wide array of technologies.
You know, the American College of Medical Genetics, an organization that I'm very fond of, has issued several position statements on direct-to-consumer genetic testing. I'm sure many of our listeners may be familiar with a company like 23andMe. They have said, due to the complexities of genetic testing and counseling, the self-ordering of genetic tests by patients over the telephone or the internet, and their use of genetic home testing kits is potentially harmful. Potential harms include inappropriate test utilization, misinterpretation, this is a big one, misinterpretation or no interpretation of test results, lack of necessary follow-up, and other adverse consequences. What are your thoughts about their position?
I think it's right on. I think that the issue with many direct-to-consumer genetic tests is that the evidence and the technology science behind the test is very limited. And so while there may be some studies that mm-hmm. suggest a certain association, the evidence is really not robust enough to make any real predictive conclusions.
Right. You have said that the current systems of oversight of genetic and genomic testing in the U.S. are not sufficient to ensure the safe and appropriate use of this testing in patient care. What do you feel needs to be done? And when you speak with Hayes Inc. clients, what counseling do you give them?
Well, certainly, I think with any laboratory-developed test, but certainly with genetic and genomic tests, there needs to be a level of oversight that ensures that the test does what it says it will do, and it predicts what it says it will predict. And without an appropriate level of oversight by the FDA or by another means, we really have no idea if these tests function the way that they're designed to function. I would say for our clients and for anyone who's considering a genetic and genomic test, you really need to consider that evidence base. Is this test really doing what it claims it will do?
Well, the other issue is really genetic counseling, which these companies don't offer. Here are the results. Thank you very much. With your permission, we will aggregate these results and save your DNA sample and have a nice day. And you'll also receive a recurring charge on your Visa every month. That doesn't sound like a really terrific way to learn more about your personal human genome.
Well, you know, I really think the issue is that with this kind of test, you send your sample in, they do an analysis, and they send you back information. They don't necessarily consider everything in the context of your personal medical history, your family medical history, which is always the most powerful tool you have to know about your hereditary risks is your family history. Look at your family. Is there a lot of heart disease in your family? Is there a lot of cancer in your family? These are things that you should consider.
Knowing your family medical history is absolutely key, and that's why we've been speaking with Dr. Diane Allingham Hawkins, PhD, Director of the Genetic Test Evaluation Program for Hayes Incorporated at hayesinc.com. That's hayesinc.com. I'm Christopher Springman. This is Body Language. Thank you very much, Doctor, for joining us today.